Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Merry New Year. Merry New Year. No, that's Happy New Year. And with New Year comes new problems. Seth and Sean Sports Radio, we had a little glitch. We're now back online. Sorry about yesterday. Sorry about for the last 5 minutes. We will take you up until 9:34. Happy New Year to all of our brethren, the tribe, not the Cleveland Indians, because Chief Wahoo no longer exists, but they're still the tribe, I guess. But Happy New Year to you, Seth. I know Seth's on. Seth?
Yes.
I can't hear you, my brother. Okay, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to the MOT.
Happy New Year.
All right, so, can we be done with the Happy New Year and get on? Let's get on with it, man.
We can. Oh, wow, somebody is in a little bit of a pickle. So we have first week of the NFL season. The Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show does pull out the victory, 176-151, I believe it was, led behind yours and my favorite, one Joe Flacco. You know, with the amount of time that we spend on talking about Joe Flacco, we should get his middle name. So I'll go look that up. But the Jets, the big winners, the Giants, well, I'm not sure the Giants were the big losers. I would say Cleveland was the big loser again, even though they didn't lose for the first time in almost 600 days. Did you happen to have a chance to watch more than just the Giants game, which was an interesting game in its own right?
I watched most of the Giants game, and then I was switching back and forth between the U.S. Open final between Djokovic and Del Potro, and I was watching mostly the U.S. Open, and then I watched the second half of Green Bay Chicago, and then I watched Monday night. It was a lot of football this weekend. My wife was probably not too amused, but who cares?
Okay, so first of all, his name is one Joseph Vincent Flacco, which is like Rocky Balboa to me. It's perfect. Joseph Vince, he could be a New York Queens Italian. Joseph Vince, it's like Joseph Fiorato Gambini. It's Joseph Vincent Flacco, so that's our guy. But anyway, so you didn't have a chance to watch the Browns and Steelers, which I paid attention to through most of the game, most of the day. The Giants didn't look very good, and I'm not sure that there's really any hope.
Sorry? It faded out a little bit.
Well, that's about what the Giants are. I said the Giants didn't look very good, especially since they can't have a punter that catches the ball. And I'm not sure that this hope is on the way. The problems that they have, particularly on the offensive line, are not going to be solved during the season unless they can swing a trade somewhere, which is very unusual in the NFL.
Yeah, no, it was a frustrating loss, but I'm not one for huge moral victories, especially in the first game of the season. They were right there, and you know, it wasn't for a fluky. And look, I think I'm tougher on Eli Manning than most Giants fans. The tip pass deflection for a touchdown, Where I thought, you know, Barkley felt like watching Barry Sanders, not in the way he runs per se, but in the, okay, 1 yard, 2 yards, 1 yard, 2 yards, 70 yards through seven people run. 1 yard, 2 yard, 1 yard, 2 yard. I was happy to see Beckham, you know, having come off the contract. I was admittedly a bit concerned on how he was going to play in regards to, was he, now that he got the money, was he going to seem motivated? Was he going to seem like a leader out there? And you know what he did? He was brilliant on Sunday. So I don't feel too discouraged. They let up 13. I mean, the defense let up 13 points. Should they have won? Yeah, they very well could have. They're going to Dallas in a game that, I'll tell you, Dallas, you know, we talked about it in our preview. Dallas has 1.5 offensive players right now. With Zach Martin hurt and Travis Frederick hurt, you have Meek, you got Dak, and you have no wideouts. I'll be honest, if the Giants go lose again, and they've lost to Dallas on Sunday night, it seems like a lot of times over the years. You know, I hate to say it, 0-1 game is a must win, but 0-2 would be dangerous. Would be dangerous with what they have upcoming.
Well, no doubt. I mean, look, I thought that Dallas would be better than they are. I'll be the first one. Look, you can't overreact in week one, and that includes being happy for your team, which we'll get to the Jets in a second. You can't overreact and say that this is the way that the season is going to go. We've seen lots of teams that have come back. But 0-2 is a big deficit, especially when you have one of those games in division. So the Giants and the Cowboys both going 0-1 with the game this Sunday night, which has a little bit more importance than you would think in a week two game, than generally speaking, because both teams, look, Dallas looked horrendous against Carolina, and the Giants, aside from one Barkley touchdown, their offense, yeah. Look, Odell Beckham got his. I watched most of the game with my cousin Adam down in Arizona. Odell Beckham got his. But they didn't move the ball. And when they did move the ball, they didn't score. So, and granted, it was against one of the better defenses, if not the best defense in the NFL with Jacksonville. So you cut them some slack there. Any more against Dallas, even if they come out with a win, this is going to be a troublesome team going forward. And again, you don't overreact based on 1 week, but the NFL is a short season. You only get 16 games. So 2 weeks, you're already at 12% of your season. So that's just math, and you can't mess with math. So let's go to the other side of Giants Stadium, where my J-E-T-S Jets were led by Fireman Ed, who showed up in Detroit, and Sam Darnold threw the first pass of his NFL career and threw his first pick six of his NFL career. And every single Jet fan, myself included, was shaking their head going, same old Jets. And then the explosion happened. And I'm not sure whether that was more of an explosion on the Jets' point of view or an implosion on Detroit. But either way, it's the first game in a very long time that Jets fans went into the fourth quarter without worrying about the outcome of the game. And Sam Darnold looked pretty good. He looked good. He didn't look great. He didn't look like the second coming. But the defense played well. And if the Jets do what the Jets can do, as they did the other night, you said it, I said it, they look like a 500 team.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not. But
well,
I guess $85 million of cap room, you know, a young defense, a young quarterback. There are worse situations to be in.
Yeah. Look, for Jets fans, there have certainly been worse situations. And more importantly, they may have solved, even if you're 8-8, and as I said in our preview, The Mets, my other team, were 12-2 at the beginning of the year, and I proclaimed on this show that there was no way that they couldn't go 500 having started out 12-2. And trust me, they're a lot further down than 500. So is it possible for the Jets to be less than 500? After one game, sure. After two games, sure. But the Jets have a good schedule. They play Miami at home. Then they go on the road to Cleveland. And then they're home again against Jacksonville. So could they be 3-0? Sure. Could they be 1-2? Sure. So first game of the season doesn't tell you all that much about anybody. But it does tell you that Pittsburgh survived without Le'Veon Bell. But I don't think survival is really where they're going to get at for the rest of the year. I'm not sure they can. James Conner's good, but he's not Le'Veon Bell. I think that was proven the other day.
So what else were your big points of week one?
Well, I just said that James Conner is not Le'Veon Bell. So that's a big point. I think that he is a good running back, but Pittsburgh did miss Le'Veon Bell. No question about it. Other points that come along, Carolina is not very good either. They definitely eked out a win, but they lost Greg Olsen, one of the show's favorite players, with another foot injury. And they lost half their offensive line to injuries, big injuries in Carolina.
I want to bring up a quick point about Greg Olsen. Quickly, is it me or did Nabate Isles pay $6 for Greg Olsen?
Well, the interesting thing about Greg Olsen, not only that Nabate Isles got a steal at $6 for his one game that Greg Olsen will play, but is it possible that Greg Olsen has played his final NFL game? So he's injured. So last year he injured the foot, and he was out most of the year. He comes back for one game, and he re-injures the same foot. He breaks the same foot. I don't know. This may be the end. And I don't say that with a smile on my face, but Greg Olsen's 33 years old. He's got a cap number over $7 million, and he has a bad wheel. And not only a bad wheel one year, but a bad wheel that's going to take him out of the lineup 2 years in a row. Most of the time, if your name was Player X and your name was John Smith and you had a cap number of $7 million and you didn't play 22 out of the 32 games the previous 2 years, you'd be looking at either a major pay cut or maybe just being cut, period. I think this may be the beginning of the end to Greg Olsen in Carolina. We know we like him as a person. We like him as a player. But what are your thoughts going on here?
Well, I believe he interviewed actually for the Monday night job. So he does, you know, so he has been looking, you know, it's so obviously, you know, he's closer to the end of his career than to the beginning. And it's been a wonderful career for him. Now, he does not have any surgery, so the hope is he'll be back later in the year, sometime in November, I assume. But again, coming off of a broken foot, I'm not quite sure what your expectations really are. But this probably is it at that contract. And then he can move back to his hometown, which is one of the greatest places in the world, of course, Wayne, New Jersey. And no, I'm kidding. He'll be very successful in whatever he does. He's an NFL Man of the Year, you know, several time all pro, very articulate. You know, he'll just see where he ends up, whether it's in broadcasting, whether it's out, you know, in football or not. You know, you never want to see someone have to be forced to retire. But it does kind of seem that this is where this is probably inevitably and sadly going.
Well, most NFL players retire before they believe that they should be retiring, to be fair.
I understand.
Ladies and gentlemen, Seth and Greg Olson come from the same town, so Seth has an affection to Mr. Olson. But the fact
affinity,
is,
right? Not an affection.
You may have infection too, but you have an affection.
Yes. Well, he also has done quite well on the Seth and Sean fantasy football team over the years. So
this is true. So I think you have to look at Carolina, and if you're Greg Olson, and you look at Carolina and the way that they've played. Granted, it's only one game, but they don't have any offensive line, and now they've lost their top receiving target. And their second receiving target is in Buffalo. Is it worth it to you to come back at the end of the year when there probably are no playoff aspirations of this team? So,
well, let's hold off on that a second. Let's look at the rest of the division. And again, it's one game. Atlanta looked absolutely awful against Philadelphia.
True.
New Orleans led up 48 points to the Flying Fitzpatricks down in Tampa, which – you know, they scored 40, and no one really worries about New Orleans' offense. But New Orleans, for 7 of the last 8 years, has had an awful defense. And so, you know, Carolina still has Christian McCaffrey, still has a good running game. They still have Cam, and they still have a really good defense. So it may be a little bit presumptuous to write them off this quick, especially if New Orleans can't find their defense and Atlanta can't really well find their heart or whatever other part of the anatomy you prefer to use.
Okay. I mean, I get what you're saying. I don't think it really matters. I don't think Carolina is going to be in this much longer because it doesn't matter whether you're New Orleans or any other team, Atlanta or whatnot. The NFL is based on talent. And aside from, as you say, Christian McCaffrey, they ain't much in Carolina, particularly on offense. I know they have Cam Newton, but overall, it just isn't. They're the equivalent of Dallas East. Or Dallas, yeah, Dallas East. They have 1.5 or maybe 2 fantasy players in McCaffrey and Cam Newton. Wow, Morgan's not a happy camper tonight.
It's all right. So anyway.
So moving around the NFL, you have Cleveland with a tie against Pittsburgh.
All right. We're back. Sorry about that.
So Cleveland doesn't lose, but they don't win. They tie, which may be the first tie in the NFL in the first week of the season. And as we did not play Ben Roethlisberger, the Pittsburgh Steelers did not play very well, again, on the road. Cleveland played as well as they could without winning. But if there's a moral victory to be taken, Cleveland has to take a moral victory going into week 2.
They do. Being down 14 with minutes to play against Pittsburgh, you know, again, Pittsburgh tried to give them this game on a platter, but regardless, you know, when you lost 16 or 30 out of the last 32, you know, you take whatever you can get. I mean, I think the story of the first week, to be honest, was watching the offense, watching Pat Mahomes in Kansas City. That offense looked unbelievable. Tyreek Hill looks like the best player in football. Again, it's 1 week against a good, although decimated San Diego defense. You know, in Mahomes' first game, four touchdowns, 300 yards. Hill had, I think, 2 touchdowns and 170 yards, something like that. I think, you know, you have to talk about Aaron Rodgers coming back, pulling his in-game Willis Reed down 20 points, comes back after the Khalil Mack touchdown, and goes for 24 points in the last quarter. It was a fun first day. It was also crappy weather, so it was very easy to sit and watch.
Yeah, no doubt whatsoever with Aaron Rodgers. And Cleveland now travels to New Orleans for week two. A very angry New Orleans team. And that's being played in the Dome, a perfect place for New Orleans, which they play their home games. I don't see Cleveland coming out with a win here. 0-1-1 to start the year for Cleveland, which is unfortunate because then they have to go home and play the Jets in week three, an angry Cleveland team at home with their home opener. They played at home. Sorry. They played at home for Pittsburgh. So playing on Thursday night, primetime, their only primetime game this year, and they get to play the Jets on Thursday night, a week from Thursday. But let's think about, you just said the names of the week. I think that the primary name of the week, and look, we saw this Kansas City offense last year at the beginning of the season. We saw them against New England. We saw what Tyreek Hill could do.
Keep going.
Well, I can't hear myself. We haven't seen this Ryan Fitzpatrick since he was a Buffalo Bill. Even with the Jets, he certainly didn't put up numbers like this. And I'd like to state that I thought this was going to happen. Granted, I thought that they were going to lose their first six or seven games. But this may happen the same way that I thought. Is if Fitzpatrick continues down this road, he's not going to give that job back to Jameis Winston anyway. They go up against the Titans this – oh, sorry. That was 2 weeks ago. Hold on. So this week, the Titans would have been a very favorable matchup for them. I would have enjoyed watching that. Hold on. They go against the Eagles this week at home in what may be a monsoon, or at least the recovering of a monsoon. I will tell you right now, I have no idea what the spread is, but if the spread was anything over, say, 6 points, I'd probably take the Bucs, because the Eagles did – granted, the Falcons didn't look good, but the Eagles didn't look that great either coming on their Thursday night game.
Well, it's really interesting seeing all the love that Nick Foles is getting. If you remember going into – the playoffs, he was simply awful. There's no other way to put it. He was horrendous. He was not very good in the first playoff game. He looked great against Minnesota. He looked great against the Super Bowl. But there's a reason people forget why that there was a reason he had one great starting year and then never started again. So I'm not surprised. Their offense is nothing special. They're not a great team by any stretch. They got hot at the right time. Look, I'm a Giants fan. I'm accustomed to teams that get hot that are not great. They get hot at the right time. But Philly wins a lot of close games. So, yeah, I can see that. I think the other thing is it was good to see Andrew Luck out there. 53 passes. His arm held up. The team was not embarrassing. It's just a lot. I can say a lot for that. For the first time in a couple of years. Yeah, they lost to Cincy, but they were down four with a minute to go and driving, and they had a fumble. Look, it's the first game of the season with a new coach and a new quarterback for all intents and purposes. You're going to have some of these problems.
Yep. I mean, the good part is about the NFL this week, at least in my opinion, week one, is that the majority of the games were close. You had maybe one or two blowouts. You had Kansas City blowing out San Diego, but even in the first half, that was pretty close. And then you have the Jets blow out on Monday Night Football.
Detroit.
But even the Rams Raiders was a close game. The Tampa Bay game was one of the more exciting games of football I've seen in years. It was just back and forth and back and forth, and no defense being played whatsoever. And you have, like I said, you have to root for the beard. Ryan Fitzpatrick having a great game. Probably the game of his life. And that's what I enjoyed out of week one. Is that going to stay for the remainder of the weeks? No. I mean, you're going to have a separation of powers. I don't think you have parity throughout the entire league. But when the Browns and the Steelers come back to play, and I think that's in week 10 or week 11, I don't foresee that game anywhere near as close as it was in week one. In week one, you have a whole lot of preparation time. You have a whole off season, and teams have jitters. So you get to see some of the great players come out and play, such as Andrew Luck. And you're right. It was really nice seeing him throw the ball really without any reservation. I mean, if you make 52 throws in a game, you're basically making every throw. It may not be perfect, but you're making every throw. If they could get a running game, that would be something important for them. And they don't have one of those either. So
now they have the worst running game in the NFL.
So going through the schedule, certainly. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, no, we can talk about that. Well, we can talk about the NFL for a couple minutes, and I think we do have to touch on Serena.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You want to keep going with the NFL right now?
Oh, well, my question was, in looking at the 0-1 teams or the 0-0-1 teams, if you're the Steelers and you have we were talking about must-win games, right? You were talking about your Giants having a must-win game. You would think before this week that the Ravens and Bengals may have been a must-win game on Thursday night for one of these teams. But when both teams are 1-1, both teams are 1-0, you can't have a must-win. But if you're looking at the Steelers at 0-0-1 going at the Chiefs opening day at home, I'm thinking that's pretty much a must-win for them. I don't think they can go down 0-2 or two in the win column within the division or within the conference so early in the season. If you're looking at the Saints at home against the Browns, pretty much a must-win situation. There are certain must-wins. You have Panthers and Falcons, which is pretty much the same as Giants and Cowboys, an in-division team between two 0-1 teams. There are several teams like that this week, Raiders and Broncos, again, both in the division and both 0-1. There are more must-win games for me on this schedule in week two than I've seen in a very long time because they pushed most of the division games to the last half of the year. So you're going to have a bunch of teams 0-2. 0-2 is not a good place to be. I think it was 20% of all playoff teams went 0-2 in their first two games. So let's move on to Serena Williams. So Serena Williams, Seth, you tell me the story because I didn't watch any of the match. I've read all the fallout. But the match seems to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, she broke rules. Now, granted, the men have gotten away with it for years. Maybe the men should have been penalized. But the rules were standard. The rules are there. They were broken. She got penalized for it. She got upset by it. Am I missing anything here?
Not really. I was actually a bit surprised by the pushback of pretty much all of Twitter in regards to Serena. Whether it's racism, whether it's sexism, whatever you want to call it. The reality is their coach was coaching. He admitted it. And regardless of whether Serena was following it or not, it was her coach. That's the rule. Now, the ump has the right to say, just give a warning, or, to be honest, not. they gave the warning, and often they'll kind of pull it back if there's nothing else. But what seems to have been lost in the whole thing was her overreaction. I thought was amazing. you know, the slamming of the racket. Now, that's a code violation no matter what. Now, if you're going to say, the third one, she's calling him a thief. Would I have suspended a game in a Grand Slam final for it? Probably not. But I don't, you know, I find it hard that people can't see where he's coming from on it or don't want to see where he's coming from. And the shame of it was you had this great 20-year-old, Naomi Osaka, the first Japanese player to ever win a Grand Slam, who pretty much was crying in her trophy ceremony because pretty much it was ruined because of all this. And that's the shame of it. Sexism? Maybe. I don't know. Like I never played competitive enough tennis where that ever came into play. I thought nobody except for Osaka, nobody handled themselves particularly with Gori on this one. He was probably too much of a hair trigger finger, and she completely overreacted.
Look, I can see Serena's point. When you get I don't agree with what she did, but I can see Serena's point. When you compare this to the men, I don't see the racism. That is mind-boggling to me. I do see perhaps sexism because John McEnroe never got a game taken away. He barely got points taken away for his antics. He did. He never got a game taken away.
He was suspected. He actually was kicked out of a match in a Grand Slam.
In a Grand Slam final?
Not in a final. But in a Grand Slam tournament, he was kicked out. He was pretty much kicked out.
I'm saying is, right. But the same situation has happened to the men. And I won't say the coaching because, again, I'm not too big of a fan to understand that. But certainly antics have taken place as far as the men, right? Rackets have been broken.
Of course.
And in Grand Slam finals and non-Grand Slam finals. And from what I understand, again, I'm not a historian of tennis, the punishment has not been the same. So if you want to tell Serena Williams, this is the punishment, I can see her saying, you know what? This is not the same as the men. You should be doing something about it. Great. Fantastic. But that's not an argument while you're on the court. That's an argument when you get off the court. That's not a reason to continue doing what you're doing and basically throw a tantrum. Because that's what she did. She absolutely threw a tantrum. And we make fun, the collective we, make fun of John McEnroe for throwing tantrums. We make fun of Jimmy Connors for throwing tantrums. So much so that we remember those two players more for their tantrums than for how great a player John McEnroe really was. If you're not a tennis historian, you remember more John McEnroe for the antics than for what he did on the court. And that's a shame. But you don't want, if you're Serena Williams, arguably the greatest player, not male, not female, greatest tennis player in history, and definitely the greatest women's tennis player in history, you don't want to be known for that crap. And the more you play this out, the more you will. And that's the shame of it all. The fact that I'm sorry, the young lady from Japan wasn't able to enjoy her ceremony, that's a me for Serena Williams. That's pay attention to me. And that's shameful. That's not tennis. And that's certainly not the tennis that she wants. I get the point that she wants equal treatment, and she's absolutely right. But that's not – you're never going to get that during the heat of the match.
Yeah, I mean, no major argument. And it was it was an amazing tournament. You know, I've never seen so many players that had to stop because of heat exhaustion. I saw one of the matches, one of the best matches I've ever seen that went till 2 o'clock in the morning because that's when I'm up feeding Morgan, between Rafael Nadal and Dominic Thiem. Djokovic, you know, comes back a year after pretty much being in the middle of nowhere, comes back and, you know, wins Wimbledon and then wins the U.S. Open. It was a really good tournament, and it's a shame that this is how it's going to be remembered.
So let's go forward. So we have a cartoon in a New York newspaper, which was now put forth in the Australian newspaper today. In the New York newspaper, it was specifically designed at Serena Williams. For different context, in the Australian paper today, and I'm not sure you knew it was even published in our Australian paper today, it was published under the not. It was published with a lot more, a lot of other cartoons under the auspices of "Are We Really This PC?" which I found pretty funny. Did the cartoon go over the line? Because to
it does.
Me, political cartoons have been going over the line since the advent of the political cartoon. So does it go over the line because of the politics, or does it go over the line because of the, because people are reading too far into it?
It's not great. I mean, it comes off really bad. It looks, you know, it just looks terrible, and there was no reason for it, to be perfectly honest. I mean, yeah, I don't even know really how to respond to it. It was just stupid and ill taste. It's the best thing I can say about it.
Okay, so there's no reason for it. So she didn't perpetuate anything that went along with the cartoon. I mean, I have a hard time. Look, if you want to say that a cartoon goes over the top, I'm okay with that. I think they're cartoons. I think any piece of journalism can go over the top. I'm looking at the cartoon right now. It's basically her throwing a tantrum on her racket with a pacifier, and the umpire looking at the other tennis player saying, can you just let her win? So let me ask you this. If the cartoon looked more like Serena Williams, so let's say it was a picture of Serena Williams doing exactly that, would you be okay with the cartoon? Because I think if you're going to be angry with it, it's the depiction of Serena Williams, not the cartoon itself.
Not the premise of the cartoon itself. But the way she looks, the way they draw her, the way she – yeah.
Okay. Look, if that's the point, if we're looking at just the way that she's being portrayed, I'm okay with the argument that this is a little over the top. But here's my question. With all this that's going on, are we losing the fact that Serena Williams reacted like a baby? Are we reacting to – are we missing the fact that she was just wrong?
Yeah, because to a lot of people, she wasn't. And I'll be honest, as I said, as beloved as she is, I was really surprised how little she got back on this.
I think she disrespect. Look, if you play a game, we say this all the time, you respect the game. You respect the game that you play. We respect the game that we cover. We understand that throwing a ball 75 yards is not like techno ball. It takes skill. And I'd never ridicule somebody for not being able to throw the ball 75 yards. Look, I make fun of Chad Pennington. I say that I could throw better than him. But That's not true. And I think everybody understands that that's complete garbage when I say it. But Serena was just not respecting the game at all. And that's my biggest problem with this, is that at the end of the day, and I love your saying at the end of the day, nobody will pay any mind to the fact that she did not respect the game. And I think this has a lot to do with the French, even beforehand. She came into this tournament with a chip on her shoulder due to what the French Open said about her catsuit. And I think she just wanted to prove something.
No real argument there.
So DePorto comes in and does what he does. Federer had a great tournament and loses late in the. I'm sorry?
Federer was awful. Federer lost to a guy who wasn't even in the top 50. I think he was having some heat. He was even having some issues with the heat as well, but he played at night. Probably wasn't happy and got beat it by an Australian that nobody had ever heard of in the fourth round.
Okay, this is why I don't do anything with tennis. Because I confuse everybody. I confuse Nadal with Federer, DePorto with somebody else. I know who Venus Williams is, and I know her sister, at least on the women's side. But this is why I really should not talk about tennis at all and should leave this to Seth. Because there's absolutely nothing good about tennis. Okay. To give you guys a little heads up on where we're going.
Nothing good about tennis?
No, nothing good about me talking about tennis.
Oh, okay. There's
nothing correct when I talk about tennis. And that statement that I just made when I said nothing good about tennis, which is what I did say, just proves the fact that there is nothing good when I talk about tennis. Okay, just to give everybody a little heads up, next week is Yom Kippur. So we will be rescheduling the show as well. We're sorry to do this. The Jewish holidays tend to fall this way every single year where you have one day that is doubled, and that will be next Tuesday. So next Tuesday's Kol Nidre. We will come up with a day for the show next week. The following week, we will have our NHL preview, and then the following week after that, we will have our NBA preview. So next week may be an abbreviated show due to the Jewish holiday. We'll figure that out, and we'll let everybody know well in advance. Unlike this week, where the Jewish holiday falls on a Tuesday, and we didn't let anybody know. So, my apologies to everybody. We just didn't have a chance to get that. But we will make sure in the future that you are well abreast of what is going on. And next week, we will certainly be talking about baseball playoffs. Because the baseball season is ending. Baseball playoffs.
Huh.
You know those predictions we made way back in March? Well, now they're coming true.
I do.
And neither one of us had the Braves in the playoffs in the NL East. I will tell you that flat out. In fact, I think both of us had the Nationals in the – no, I had the Dodgers. But I think you had – no, maybe you had the Dodgers. One of us had the Dodgers. One of us had the Nationals in the World Series. And the Nationals certainly didn't do anything. So we'll look back. So we'll look back next week on our predictions. I'll take a look at what we did in the show previously. And we will see how wrong we really were. Although, if either one of us picked Mike Trout, that would be a winning case. So, if you are the Los Angeles Angels this week, you have found out that your two-way star, Shohei Ohtani, will need Tommy John surgery. And chances are will not be able to pitch all of next year. May be able to hit, but definitely will not be able to pitch. And you come to an understanding much similar, much the same as the Yankees did in the early 1920s, where a two-way player may be worth, and we're using WAR, so we're using wins above replacement, may be worth four WAR, so four wins, two as a pitcher, two as a hitter over the course of a year if he does both. But also, maybe if you extrapolate his hitting stats this year may be worth six WAR, or up to six WAR, six wins. as just a hitter, which is the reason why, well, one of the reasons why, the Yankees decided to make Babe Ruth just a hitter. He was just more valuable. At what point do you – look, I know that the Angels won the bidding in part because they agreed to make this guy a two-way player. At what point, Seth, he's 23 years old, do you basically insist upon going one way? You don't let him do both. He's done very well doing both, but he's more valuable in one direction, whether that be hitting or pitching. Do you do it now based on the fact that he needs this surgery, or do you wait and see how it plays out?
I think you wait and see how it plays out. We know he can't play. He can't do this for another year. And look, part of the mystique of Ohtani is having him as a two-way. I see no harm, as long as he's not rushed back under any circumstance, I see no harm in letting him do this, and letting him try and make this one more run at it. He was a good enough pitcher that it was worthwhile. Now, is he as valuable a pitcher as a hitter? No. But, you know, I think you owe it to him. I think you owe it to your franchise. I mean, the problem also, you have a franchise that's wasting the biggest talent, the best talent of the last 30 years. And if your second best player has the opportunity to do a couple different things, which can put you into a playoff or make you relevant, because let's be honest, the only thing relevant about the Angels is Mike Trout. Prior to Ohtani, I think you owe it to yourself. I think you owe it to your fans. I think you owe it to see if he can do it. You know, he's earned that right.
Well, we'll talk more definitely about it.
Maybe he hasn't earned that right. I probably shouldn't say he's earned that right, but I think it makes sense.
Well, we'll talk more about it next week as to how the Angels can make a play and come back, because right now the Angels are crippled. And they're crippled by Albert Pujols' contract, who's $32 million that we knew at the beginning of the contract was going to be horrible and has played out even worse. And the fact that this guy can only play one position and is eating $30 million of salary. Man, when you see contracts like that, you completely understand what the NFL players want. And you understand why the NFL owners won't give it to them. Okay,
yeah.
So, right, I mean, that's what they want. They want guaranteed contracts. But when you're throwing your head against the wall, literally, every single week, you can understand why the NFL owners are not doing that. So the one thing that did surprise me, and then we'll go into our last 5 minutes. The one thing that did surprise me this week is the lack of protests. I'm only thinking about PCU. We're not going to protest. But the lack of protests in the NFL this week. There were very, very few, which, for better or for worse, did not give our illustrious president some room to maneuver here, to deflect once again. I don't know why there were less, and I'd be surprised if it stayed less. But we haven't really talked all that much about Colin Kaepernick. I mean, we touched upon it a little bit last week, but do you think it has anything to do with the advertisement that Nike threw out there? And the NFL has always said, we're using this as a beacon or a way to communicate our message. Do you think the NFL players have really gotten around that and saying, look, with Kaepernick, we've done that. We don't even need to do it on the field. Because he's doing it through Nike.
It may be. Probably to a degree, I think they feel that with this, that at least there's been some, while he's not back on the field, this is certainly the next best thing. And, you know, for all the Nike the people complaining about it, number one, more people are buying it than, you know, for every Nike that you're burning, there's, you know, five more that are being purchased. And for all those who have said, well, we're never buying Nike again, well, Adidas and Puma also tried to get him under contract. So, you know, am I going to compare him to Muhammad Ali? No. But you know, he was never at an echelon that high. He was a starting quarterback for the worst team in the NFL. And he was a pretty decent quarterback. And was there collusion? Probably in an unwritten rule, yes. He certainly would be a quarterback who belongs in the NFL when you see what else is out there. Starter, I don't know. And for certain teams, he would not fit. But I mean, when you're looking at the Buffalo Bills right now, and you're looking at some of these other teams, you're going to tell me he's not a better backup quarterback than Nathan Peterman? Come on. He's not a better quarterback than Sam Bradford? Maybe not. So, I mean, there's a frustration that, you know, and now it may be too far gone for him in regards to football. He's been out for 2-3 years. Who knows where his game is at? But I'm assuming, you know, that this is pretty gratifying for people, you know, who have been on his side the entire time and really feel he's gotten a raw deal, at least from a financial perspective. You know, it may not be playing football, but at least from a financial perspective, he's a bit covered, which I think is what was the hope, which is the hope.
Well, I think that was part of my last 5 minutes in that. Let's understand this. Colin Kaepernick is still earning $1 million. In this Nike commercial. I don't know exactly how much, but you can rest assured, as the face of Nike, you're earning $1 million. He's not getting his head bashed in every day. He's not putting his life on the line every single time he steps on a field. And he's still earning $1 million. That doesn't sound like a bad deal to me. Now, some do have compared him to Muhammad Ali. I think what he's done is comparable to Muhammad Ali. I don't think he is comparable. But I think the act in which he's doing this absolutely is. I think this is taking a stance. Is he giving up everything as the Nike? Look, I think people have gotten way overboard on what everything is. He's giving up his livelihood. He did. To make a stance, he gave up his livelihood. If you want to compare him with a Vietnam vet or somebody that's in the military, look, I don't have an argument for you. He didn't give up everything. But that's why it's marketing. I don't think it's true. I don't think people are saying, oh, they compare him to a war veteran. I don't think that is. I think that just gives more play to the nonsense that's going on where if you protest the national anthem, you're protesting the flag. I just think it goes to that point. But good on him, good on Nike for standing by him. And I love the fact, love it, that this is doing exactly what it should be doing, which is bringing attention to what he wants. That's it. If you want to burn your Nikes and go get Converse, by the way, to all you idiots out there, and I'll call you idiots, Converse is owned by Nike. So go ahead. All right. Happy New Year to all the MOTs. Seth, you're up. You got about 2 minutes.
Biggest fight of the year coming up tomorrow night or Saturday night. Canelo Alvarez, Triple G for the title, the rematch after the controversial draw a few months ago. They hate each other, but the idea of paying $90 for a fight is absolutely obscene. And at a certain point, I think that's what I saw it was running. The idea, you know, I'd rather go to a movie theater and watch for $10-15, because to pay $90 to watch anything on television to me is absolutely ridiculous. But hopefully it's good. Ohio State, TCU. Good game Saturday night. I'm going to actually be here for a change and have some nice and peace, do some work, watch some football. Should be good. Looking forward to it.
And by the way, if you haven't checked out Eric Dungy, the quarterback for the Syracuse Orange, he's only thrown 5 touchdowns in the first 2 weeks. Big game against Florida State this week. It'll really show if the Qs are, I was about to say the Jets, I think they're both in the same predicament. It will really put a stamp on whether the Qs are back in any legitimate form. So check that out on Saturday. Okay, for Seth Kamens, this is Sean Palmer. Again, stay tuned to Facebook and Twitter next week. We'll come up with a time for the show. Again, apologies. You know what? Jewish holidays really don't help anybody this time of year. So we'll talk to you later. Have a great week, everybody.
Shana Tova.